Blog Talk Radio.
Pour yourself a cup of tea, put your feet up, and relax. Show host Randy Fine, narcissistic abuse expert, compassionate counselor for clients worldwide, and author of the groundbreaking new book, Close Encounters of the Worst Kind, invites you into her sanctuary, a place where your emotional, physical, and spiritual well-being are all that matters. Time to Heal is a fundraising single written and performed by Johnny Z for the Amy Winehouse Foundation. For more information, please go to johnnymusic.com, johnnymusic.com. And now, it's time to meet Randy, show host of the podcast enjoyed by fans around the globe, A Fine Time for Healing.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. And today you get to listen to my sexy voice because I have something going on in my in my sinuses, and it's giving me that kind of throaty kind of voice. So enjoy it. It is what it is. Today is Free Advice Friday, the day that I take your calls and answer your questions about your narcissistic abuse issues, or the day that you can just share with us something that you have done that is working well for you. If you'd like to call in, the number is 424-220-1801, 424-220-1801. And I want to thank you all, all those who have purchased Close Encounters of the Worst Kind, the Narcissistic Abuse Survivor's Guide to Healing and Recovery. I am getting amazing reviews, and I get messages from all of you pretty much every day telling me how much it is changing your life. So if you have not purchased the book yet, I really urge you to do so. It is very, very helpful. Somebody wrote a review saying that they had bought 4 books on this topic on Amazon, and this is the only one that they could not put down. So I encourage you all to read it and leave me reviews so other people can appreciate the book as much as you have. So we do have a caller in the queue, and we'll start with that. I do have a letter to read as well. So let's see who's with us today. Good morning.
Hello. Hello. Hi. How are you today?
Oh,
anyway,
very good. Hi.
So I've been enjoying reading your book. I've called before, and I've really enjoyed. I really enjoy this podcast, and I am recommending it to other people as well who are experiencing narcissistic abuse.
Thank you. And you're out of the country, right? You're in another country, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm American, but I live and work in Germany. So,
okay, Germany. Okay.
And so I've talked to you several times.
And, yeah, I know. I remember.
But I have an interesting experience to share with everybody. I really hadn't thought too much about overt narcissists that much until recently.
Okay.
And I just returned from a trip to Israel and over Christmas. And we had a guy that sure came across as an overt narcissist. He was very knowledgeable, obviously, about the sites, explained well, kept us safe. But obviously, he had some issues with older single American women traveling alone as part of the group. And I had to listen to some of his, I think one of the characteristics of an overt narcissist, they tend to brag a lot, they're full of themselves, and then plus the snarky comments that go with them that put others down. And they don't care who's listening. For example, this is my real, I really hadn't thought about it, but I didn't expect to run into one of these on a trip. one of the comments was that I was visiting a church. We were in a church, and there were some stained glass windows that turned out they were made out of alabaster. And obviously, I think he was embarrassed because he couldn't answer my question about them. So he, in a very rude tone of voice, he said, "Well, if you want information, you pay a shekel for it."
Wow.
There's a pay for an experienced traveler, I know when not to instigate any kind of altercations, because first of all, we were under travel warning, and so I had to be very, very careful, especially being a federal employee. So that was one of them, and another one was when there was a single woman, another one, she was from Brazil, I think, was a couple of minutes late joining us because she had to use the restroom. And so we waited. We didn't wait long, but he said, "Well, we're waiting for so-and-so. Maybe she'll get back here by tomorrow."
Oh, nice. Nice.
They're
everywhere, aren't they?
Yeah, and then another one was we were getting back on the bus. I stopped. I have a passion for cats, especially the ones that are near the Arab markets around there. They're really I just love those animals, and I took a picture of one, and he got really ticked off, and he said, "Get on the bus."
No, you know, he's not in the right job. Obviously, that's this is. These kind of people are not the kind of people that should be giving tours to foreigners to introduce them to their country, because their job is to really make you fall in love with their country, not turn you against it. But thank you. Yeah, thank you for sharing. We actually have another caller. Was there anything that you wanted to tell me? Any other things that you wanted to tell me?
Yeah, well, and I think I think what really kind of set this off too was that we were going through this. I think one of the Arab markets in East Jerusalem, and I like to see everything, all aspects of everything. So I took a picture. I think one of the things that set this off was I took a picture of there was a market there was showing all these. I think they assist Palestinian propaganda on clothing and posters and things like that. So I took a picture of it. I just told him, I said, I want to see all aspects of everything. And I said, that's one of the reasons I want to visit. And he, I don't remember his exact words, but he was obviously offended. So I sent a letter to the travel agency that organized the tour. Of course, I said more good than positive things about the tour anyway, about what we saw and how magical it was, and I will be returning probably next summer. And I just said I felt like that this was inappropriate, but I did not confront him because this is not my country.
Yeah, well, very, very good. I was going to say you should write. Okay, I'm going to move on to the next caller. I appreciate you listening. Thank you for referring the show, and keep listening. I'm going to just put you on hold. Okay.
Okay. Sure.
Okay. Good morning. Can you hear me?
Hi, good morning. How's it going?
It's going great. It's going great.
Good.
Hi.
I stumbled upon your podcast while trying to figure out my own situation. My mom and my sister are very toxic narcissists. I'm just trying to listen to any podcast that I can about the topic and stumbled across yours and the way you describe narcissism and all that stuff, I just absolutely just nails my situation. So
Okay. So you're just calling to listen, or you have a question?
No, I had a question for you. I'm 100% convinced what I'm dealing with. And in the process, you know, I've had some questions, and I'm just curious if you've ever come across a narcissist who actually is a true victim, and how I'm curious how they react to actually being a victim instead of just perceiving themselves to be a victim when there's an actual, you know, occurrence there that they are a victim. How do they react to that?
Okay, that's an excellent question. It really is. So, in my opinion, all narcissists have been victims. It is what creates the personality disorder. It is something that happens in childhood that is so unbelievably intolerable that they decide they never want to be that person again or experience that reality again. This is generally when it forms. And once they form the personality disorder, it's a suit of armor that they wear throughout the rest of their life. So they may remember an experience, but they don't want to go there and feel the feelings of that experience. So that's what the false self, the suit of armor, is there to protect them from, so they don't have to feel it. Now, has this person been victimized in childhood, or is this something that happened in adulthood?
Oh, you're talking about when I'm saying when they're actually a victim?
Yes.
Yeah, no, these were adulthood situations.
Okay.
That I'm referring to.
Okay. So, the narcissist may react to a situation. First of all, let me explain this. Someone with NPD always thinks they're the victim. They think everyone else is the perpetrator and they are the victim. So whether it's a true crime or it isn't a true crime, they're going to claim victim stance on it. So are we talking about a crime or what kind of victimization are we talking about?
Well, I will, you know, I mean, I'll tell you the examples of, you know, what I'm talking about. So the narcissist that I'm dealing with, you know, I point my finger and put my foot down and say, you've crossed my line. You know, it's unbelievable the reaction to it and how they cannot let it go when I say, you've crossed the boundary and you've, you know. So anyway, then in the real life, for example, the situation, this narcissist had a knife pulled on her, and then later in life she was actually fondled on a flight from the person sitting next to her. So, and it's weird because those two times where she actually is a victim, you know, somebody pulls a knife on you and threatens your life, you can get a harassment injunction. And then, of course, the plane incident where you fall asleep and then you wake up, somebody's hand is up your dress, you know, while you're sleeping. Those two incidents really just seem to disappear, like it didn't bother them, like that happened. You know, I think it's kind of weird.
Okay. Now, was anyone there to witness either one of these situations?
Well, the knife situation, I'm not sure. It might have just been her and the other person. But the plane situation, you know, that actually happened. It was on the news, you know, the man didn't even deny it. He just said she was sending mixed signals. That was his excuse. So, you know, both incidents actually happened.
Okay.
But it did not seem to affect them how it should, how I would think it would affect somebody that was in that situation. Just didn't bother them, it seemed like.
Yeah, so I can explain that to you. And this is a really interesting thing to talk about. So there's something called narcissistic injury. And narcissistic injury is anything that reaches through the false self and affects the true self. Now, when that happens, and the way that happens, is through criticism. Because when you tell a narcissist that anything is wrong with them, and it doesn't matter how you phrase it, it doesn't matter if you use the, you know, I feel kind of way, or if you're harsh, or if you're saying, I really didn't appreciate the way you said that, or it doesn't matter how you say it. It is all construed as criticism. And criticism is narcissistic injury, and it creates rage. So there is no way to say anything other than, okay, yes, ma'am, I will, you know, or ignore them. There's nothing else, nothing you can say to a narcissist except agree with them. If you're not agreeing with them, you are criticizing them in their mind. Now, I would imagine that it was very, the knife incident was very fearful, but I would also imagine that she was able to get some kind of attention from that after the fact. And with the plane incident, she definitely was able to get attention after the fact. So she was in the news, everything like that. Narcissists live for attention, whether it's negative, whether it's positive. They just need it. And the reason they need it is because they are an empty vessel inside who cannot generate any good feelings on their own. So they must have attention, adoration, and there's three. I'm drawing a blank. But anyway, they must have that, and they'll take it any way that they can get it. Being in the news, having everybody in the plane be like, oh, my gosh, you know, she was the star and the hero of that event. So, of course, it didn't affect her in a negative way. It was almost she enjoyed it.
Yeah, maybe it just there was not a the reaction, like I say, and the reaction of me pointing a finger at her saying, you've crossed the line in my life, and the bad things that actually happened to her are horribly skewed in our situation, you know. it's just kind of a bizarre observation that I've wondered about, and wondered if that's a common trait among true narcissists when they are actually a victim, how they react when they're actually a victim versus when somebody's just criticizing them, you know.
Right. And, you know, and it is. And I've never actually gotten the question, but it does make sense. Because when we're victimized, so in other words, if somebody pulled a knife on her, okay, so it may have happened, it may not have happened. Sometimes they make up things to get attention. So that one we can't be sure of. It could have been she could have been needing attention and maybe made something up so that everybody went, oh, you know, and rallied around her and felt so bad for her and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's definitely a way to get attention.
I feel that actually happened. I, you know, just my perspective. I wasn't a witness, but, yeah, I feel that actually happened.
Okay. So the narcissist will turn a victimization situation into one where they can get lots of narcissistic supply for it. So that's the way they would deal with it. Oh, I'm going to use this. This will bring attention to me. They need attention like heroin addicts need heroin. It is every second of every minute of every day, from the morning they wake up until the time they go to sleep. No sooner do they have that narcissistic supply, they need it again. That's why you never accumulate brownie points with a narcissist. Nothing you ever do counts. It's what can you do in the moment.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this. Have you purchased my book yet, Close Encounters of the Worst Kind?
No, I haven't purchased it. I just stumbled across your podcast not too long ago, so.
Okay, this is a book you have to have. You absolutely have to have it. And if you read the reviews on Amazon, you will see. This is the most comprehensive, most up-to-date, most groundbreaking book on this topic. And I cover every possible thing you could imagine from, you know, every kind of relationship you have. I explain the psychological and emotional aspects of narcissism. I explain how it's formed. I also talk about how to deal with these people. I talk about how to heal from it. It is something that anyone who has come across narcissistic abuse or been the victim of narcissistic abuse in their life, they, you must have this book. And when you see it, you will understand why I say that. So I highly recommend that you purchase the book. I recommend it to all the people that I counsel. It is helping people tremendously. And I don't know if you heard me at the beginning of the show, but there's one comment on Amazon that says she bought 4 books on this topic on Amazon, and this is the only one that's helping her, the only one she couldn't put down. So just, you know, a shameless plug for myself, but only because, you know, I'm not somebody who likes to sell myself or brag. I can do it because I know it is helping. So I encourage you to get that book. I encourage you to get that book. Was there anything else that you wanted to share?
Not really. I mean, I think I've done a lot of research into the topic. I'm a delivery guy, so I actually get to spend 8 hours a day listening to podcasts, and it's pretty nice, you know. And so I've charted a course. You know, I've already gone no contact with my sister.
Okay, good.
I mean, I'm 36. She's 29, and so we're well into adulthood, and she's cost me one job, one part-time job. She's cost my significant other their position. You know, by airing our dirty laundry at work, it's pretty sad. I mean, this all started. I got her, I was working a nice part-time job that I enjoyed, one weekend a month, $200. And she was constantly bitching about her part-time job, bartending, and how mean everybody was to her and how the bosses were so mean to her. And I didn't realize it, but I do now. But, you know, so I got her a job at working with my part-time job with me.
Oh, wow.
And then she turns around and airs my dirty laundry there. And so I stopped getting called back for work. So, yeah, and her just excuses and blaming everybody else, you know, she didn't tell the boss, but she admits to telling the boss's, you know, right-hand man. So, of course, it's going to get to him.
Right. They infiltrate every situation. No, narcissists infiltrate. You have to keep them away from every personal thing you do. Now you know.
shut her down. I've shut her down as much as I can, you know. And not only that, you know, it didn't end there. Believe it or not, we're still working together, except we work at a place that hires tens of thousands of people, so I don't have to see her.
Also is very risky on your part, you know, and it's very risky because narcissists will, they do what's called triangulation. They use the smear campaign. They do a lot of things.
Yep.
If she wants to take you down, she's going to take you down. So
she absolutely wants to take me down. And at the current position, for example, my boss ran into her and said, "Hey, do you know so and so?" Which was me, and she said, "Yeah, he's a douchebag."
Oh,
and
nice.
So I called her on the phone about it to ask her about it, and I said, "Did you tell my boss I was a douchebag?" And she said, "Yeah." And I said, "Do you care to explain?" And she said, "It's because you are."
Nice.
And that was her explanation. So she knew she crossed the line. Her mode of operation is to go to the family and spread her version first. So when it comes out with me, I'm wrong. And then I have my mother telling me that she was just joking and she would not vary from that.
My gosh, it's maddening.
Yeah.
The whole thing
is maddening. It is absolutely maddening.
You know what?
So
get a copy of the book and call back next month. I want to hear what you have to say and what and how you've learned. Because, you know, you can listen to podcasts. I tell people this all the time. You can listen to podcasts. You can read articles. It's not the same as the therapeutic aspect of what I do. And I actually offer that through the book. So you learn a lot of different things that you may not have heard before, and very, very good strategies and very good insight. So I'd love to hear from you. Let me know, you know, how it's helped you, and I believe it truly will. So I'm going to put you back on hold. I have a letter from somebody who actually has a question about a family situation that you might want to listen to. So
All righty.
Thank you
appreciate
so much
Thanks.
For calling. I appreciate it. Thank you.
You're
okay, so this was the letter I got. I have listened to several of your YouTube videos, and immediately it resonated to me. I'm 51 years old. I have two beautiful children and divorced. I grew up in the south of France and live in the USA for the past 20 to 25 years. I left home at the age of 22 in the middle to study medicine in Paris. And then I went further into Reunion Island and then further to New York City and then further to Seattle, where I live now. It took me 50 years to understand that I had a hyper-narcissistic mother. Fortunately, after seeing several psychologists, I finally found the right person who nailed the diagnosis after the first consultation, and at this point, I entered the world of a narcissist mother. My mother stole my identity, my life, my soul. She switched from being a mean, harsh mother yelling at her little daughter all the time with this nonsense rage and spent her time criticizing me from top to bottom, but also gossiped about the others at, you know, in their backs with a big smile in front and always very seductive, flamboyant, wearing jewels and fur, haute couture, Chanel, always loving rich people, hanging out at the clubhouse, laughing when I was completely sequestered in the jail castle, isolated and misunderstood. I quickly understood that the only way to escape is to behave as the perfect child while I was dreaming of sleeping in a tent and looking at the stars at night. But I had to silently follow the rules, her rules. I have an older brother who is the protective one, and she constantly triangulates the family and pushes each other against each other. She is so good at that and created this competitive, unhealthy vibration, and my father was barely home. When I had my first child, she switched to a different person who appeared very effective from outside, but in fact extremely invasive in my life, trying to be my friend, but in fact wanted to feed herself with problems and loved talking about problems and gossips and criticism. And if people thought she was nice, I knew something was wrong as I was hyper-anxious with her. I did not have any oxygen, even as I was living miles away. And when she came for holidays, I had to let her do what she wanted to do, even set up all, including my daughter's baptism. I even was not able to buy my own daughter's baptism dress. For my two daughters, she organized everything with a huge reception with people I did not care about. But everyone was telling me how nice she was and generous she was, but nobody could see the manipulation behind the curtains. And that is one of the examples of what she did, and I can go on and on. When I stated this in person, read books about narcissism, and understood the manipulation and knew the poor prognosis, I had to set boundaries. And in fact, I had no contact for the past 2 years. She had manipulated all the family against me, and she now played victim by crying how miserable she is, and she is making me play the role of mean daughter, and no one stood up for me except one person who knew my mother and never wanted to be under a spell. Unfortunately, this dear friend, father, brother, passed away, and I have no one except my daughters. It is difficult during this time of the year, but I know I'm doing the right thing. My brother sent me a text, and he said that my mother will die soon. She's almost 80 years old, and he is trying to defend her by saying she is trying to make it up, but she never apologized or falsely apologized as she did when I only told her that she was yelling all the time when I was a child. Oh, so I guess I hurt you. I'm sorry. I was not aware of this. Okay. So the past is the past, so let's move on. Now, what are we going to do now? What are you going to do? What is your solution? I was devastated inside, and I knew after this I was not going to see her again. My question is the following. With all these manipulations and being myself isolated from the rest of the family, even if I know that I am right and she won't change, do you think that someone will stand up and face her and say, no, what Crystal is doing is right? When she dies, how can I face this? I do not want to see my family as I feel I will have to face an army. I want to go back to my country during vacation and show my daughters where I grew up, but I cannot free myself and would like to be free to say loudly how horrible she was and how she continued to manipulate. I would like to shout to my friends, to my family, wake up, can't you see? But I can't. It will add additional drama. How can this manipulation end? How do I make close people aware of this? How do I explain to my children when they want to see their silent cousins? why are people deaf or blind when they see me isolated thousands of miles away and they only talk to and they only play the role of the devil's advocate? Okay, this is such a heavy question and a very, very typical one. As a matter of fact, I'm in the middle of something very similar because my sisters, although they know what my mother is, they have chosen to rally around her again and make me the oddball, and my mother is 89, so same kind of thing. Okay. So you basically know the answer to this question, but I'm going to reaffirm it for you. And the answer is that you cannot bring attention to this. Because what she has done and what she's done all these years is this low-level smear campaign on you. So everybody already knows that there's something, quote-unquote, wrong with you. And when you just blurt it out, they will look at you as if you are the crazy one. She will tell you, tell them you are the crazy one. They've always believed you're the crazy one. And if they haven't heard that you're the crazy one, they will now. So there's absolutely nothing you can do to call these people on their behavior. And you can't beat a narcissist at their game. What you can do is out-manipulate a narcissist, and I teach people how to do that all the time. It's counterintuitive, so you'll never figure out how to do that on your own. But they can't see this for various reasons. How many years did it take you to see it? The reason is that narcissists use manipulation tactics. They use psychological warfare. They use brainwashing. They alter the way people see reality. So the people who are rallying around your mom and protecting her, defending her, are brainwashed. And there's nothing you can do to wake them up out of it. They are getting something. She is getting something. And these people are what are called flying monkeys. The flying monkeys, like the Wizard of Oz, are mindless creatures who do the bidding of the evil person. She says do it, they do it. Now, in many cases, flying monkeys have been fed so much propaganda that they will hate you so much that she doesn't even have to ask them to do it. They just do it because they've been told that you are horrible to her, you abandoned her, you did this, you did that. They have been told so many lies and so many horrific things about you that they're now taking on her project for her. She sits back and her hands stay clean. That's the purpose of the flying monkeys. So they will never wake up. They can't hear it, just like you didn't hear it for many years. This is a tragic, tragic situation. When you finally realize that you've been victimized by a narcissistic parent or sibling or whatever it is, it is you that has to abandon the family. It is you that looks like you've abandoned the family, and it is you that holds the guilt for having abandoned the family. You have no other choice but to abandon the family, and that means you give up holidays. You give up all the things that you expected a family would bring to your life. You have to be the one to give it up because you will never get validation. Nobody will ever admit to doing anything wrong. And, you know, you say that they play the role of devil's advocate. That's because they think they're doing something wonderful to protect this little old lady. My mother's a little old lady. She sits there. People think she's so, so needy. Oh, my gosh, she's so needy. And everybody wants to help her. Everybody wants to do for her. Nobody sees this. Narcissists only offend behind closed doors. And that's, when I say that, I mean overtly. They will spread seeds of propaganda among other people, but they do it in a way that you can never call them on. They say things in a specific way, in a way that you could never go back and say, well, you said such and such, because it's phrased in a way or done in a way that they are not accountable for. They're brilliant in this way. The brilliance is a pathology, and it's a brilliance we never want to have because we don't want that horrible pathology, because along with that pathology comes the loss of the ability to be happy, the loss of the ability to love. So they spend every living moment like parasites trying to get attention. All this, all the things that you're saying is happening to you, is all in an effort to ensure she has narcissistic supply 24/7. She will do anything to get it. And the manipulations that narcissists come up with would blow your mind. The thing, the lengths that they will go to smear you or to get their way are beyond believable. And they can orchestrate it in a New York minute, maybe even less, a second. They can orchestrate a plan years out in 1 second, and they will know exactly how they're going to go about that. We could never, ever think this way. And it is because we can't think this way that they get us, because they know we don't think this way. They know we want to buy into their garbage. They know that they're so awful that all we can do is please them, and that's what they want to do. So the raging and all this awful behavior is just to make you grovel. Sometimes the rage is silent. You get the silent treatment. That is a rage that is meant to make you feel so bad that you will give them absolutely anything to make the silence stop. So it's manipulation, it's rage, but it's a different kind of rage. Either way, they whip you right into shape because you can't deal with the feelings that they're causing you. Now, let's talk a little bit about boundaries. Boundaries are only effective if you set ones that you can follow through on. If you set a boundary, they cross it, and you don't do anything about it, or you don't say do what you said you would do about it, you have lost all the ground you've gained. In fact, not only have you lost it, you set yourself. So when you set a boundary with someone, make sure it's something you absolutely can follow through with. And a boundary always has to come with a consequence. I will not tolerate such and such from you. And if you do such and such, this is what will happen. And they will always cross that boundary because they don't believe you. And then you have to be ready to enforce it. So that is what I have to say about boundaries. And most people don't understand that. People say, oh, well, I keep setting boundaries, but they keep crossing them. You're right. They will keep crossing them unless they have a consequence. They have something they're going to lose by crossing that boundary. So you have to be careful with the kind of boundaries that you set. I talk about this. There's a whole section of how to set boundaries in my book, Close Encounters of the Worst Kind, because it is very, very specific the way that you have to do this. Now, in some cases, you can set boundaries and have some kind of perfunctory relationship with the person. You can just call and say, you know, because when it's an elderly parent, sometimes you want to just be able to call in and say, how you doing? Okay, fine, just checking. If you are in control of the situation and you know how to do it, which is something I talk about how to deal with parents in these situations. I talk about how to deal with everyone else in these situations. But in any case, if you can be in total control of the conversation, make it short, walk away, whatever you can do, you can check in from time to time. But that will come after a good 6 months of complete healing. And healing means, unfortunately, that you have to work with a professional like me to get to that point. Because the brainwashing that has been done to you will not go away. You can't think your way out of this kind of situation. You just can't. what you feel is a rational thought process is not necessarily one because of the actual changes that have been done to your brain that has to be reprogrammed out of you. And if you don't have that, if that doesn't happen, you will revisit the pain. You may go 6 years, 10 years, and be fine. One little thing will happen, and you'll be right back there again. So if you want to completely heal from this, you have got to have professional help to do it. And it doesn't take very long. Most people are healed within 6 months of time when they work with me. I don't know anybody else's method. I haven't heard anybody else that can do this as effectively as I can do it. But I'm just saying, there's pain that is multi-leveled, very, very deep, buried very, very deep. And in order to get over this, really, really get over this, I urge you to get some help. Now, a great place to start is with this book, because the reason I wrote this book is because when I hang up with people for the first time, I feel like I wish I was in their pocket because I know how much support they're going to need. That's why I wrote this book. So you will have me in your pocket. You will hear me as you read this book. It is my voice. You will hear me. You will hear my whole thought process, and it will help you. It will give you a great, great, great foundation to start this process. So that's really important. So I want to thank my two callers today and the person who wrote me this letter, because when you talk about your situations and you ask your questions, the thousands of people who are listening gain from that. So I encourage everyone to call. I do this on the second Friday of every month. I call it Free Advice Friday. And on that Friday, you can either listen in or you can call. The number to call is 424-220-1801. And I always do the show at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. So thank you all so much for calling in, writing in, listening. It is just such an important part of getting you through this process, getting you where you need to go, helping you understand these convoluted thought processes and this counterintuitive information, because everything, when you're dealing with a narcissist, everything is counterintuitive. If you think you should do A, you're wrong. You should do B. It's never the same as you would deal with any other ordinary person, and that's what makes this so very difficult to deal with. So that's pretty much what I have to say today, and I think it was a really good show. I think we got out a lot of good information, and I do hope to hear from you in some way, shape, or form for the next show, or have you call in. In the meantime, go to my blog, randigfine.com, randigfine.com, and you will read many articles. Several excerpts from the book are in there. And keep listening to A Fine Time for Healing. Thank you, and may joy and serenity always be yours. Goodbye.
We hope you enjoyed today's programming. To learn more about Randy Fine, read her articles, or to make a counseling appointment with her, please visit randigfine.com. That's randigfine.com. Or visit her on Facebook at Randy G. Fine.